Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. Hey friends, I'm so excited to share Reuben Watson's story of restoration and healing today. Now, as Reuben struggled to survive his mother's illness and 13 different foster placements, the Lord was working. He was bringing all the pieces together to use Reuben and his beautiful redeemed life for the glory of God. Well, Reuben, thanks for joining me today. I am so excited to share your story. But before we jump into that, I'd like to hear a little bit about where you are now and the new family the Lord's built for you and what you're doing, kind of as a profession now.
Yeah. So, one, thank you so much for the chance to come and to speak with you and hopefully provide some encouragement in life to your listeners and to families and things like that. So I'm humbled. And it's definitely the Lord's work that our paths were crossed. And so I really appreciate that and the time for today. And I'm excited to be able to talk a little bit about my family.
Us too. We can't wait to hear.
My family. So I have a wonderful bride, my queen. We've been married now for almost 8 years. Time has flown by. And so I met my bride in college. And she's almost two, going into December. So I've got a beautiful little one, little princess, Princess Imani, and my wonderful my bride, Emily. And that's been some of my greatest blessings of being a father and being a husband. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. Those are sweet times when you just begin to really build a life together and see how the Lord's, using you just a day at a time in such a sweet season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's being a parent. I've learned a whole lot about my patients and the area of growth there that the Lord is using for sanctification.
That's right. That's right.
But it's a wonderful just reminder of his grace every day. So I'm thankful for that there. And so professionally, I am currently working for Sunrise Children's Services, foster care adoption, residential care, family services here in Kentucky. So it's a gift and blessing to be able to do that there and to serve families across the state, to serve kids across the state and provide some encouragement and partnering with churches and local community partners and businesses to move the mission of caring for the orphan and widowed here in Kentucky.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I just, I love to hear what Sunrise is doing there in Kentucky. I know when we were there for 15 years, they just continued to grow. Honestly, as the brokenness in our world, gets deeper and deeper. And I know you're doing a great work there, but it's not, it's kind of an unusual way that you got to Sunrise. And so I just want to back up. When you were a little boy and things that were going on in your life and how your journey really got difficult and just kind of share with us what went on and what brought you to Sunrise and to be adopted at age 13. Just kind of walk us along that path.
Absolutely. So the Lord has given me a testimony that really shows his glory and how he will keep us. As his own. And I have been reminded of that throughout my life that that I am his, and that although I lack earthly things that I desired as a kid and things like that, the Lord has provided those things for me over and abundantly. And so I never want to start anything and talking about my story without first bringing him and showing, it's because of him, his glory, and this is his story. And so not one of pain and trauma, but one of really how he has stepped in and bridged that gap in the place of hopelessness, which is the story of so many others who maybe haven't walked directly where I have walked, but have known that place of despair and hopelessness. And so I just want to be sure to start there when it comes to my story.
Yeah, amen. So, yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm. So for me as a kid, it was an interesting upbringing, to say the least. To kind of give you a a brief version of my early years. When I was first born, I was actually placed into a home in which I thought, kind of fast forwarding to where I'm at, I thought, and I've learned now recently, last few years, I was supposed to be adopted. I didn't know that at the time. This family actually became my God family, and I had no idea how they were my God family. They were just always there. And so this family had to give me back to my biological mother. My biological father was never present in the home. And so I learned of his name about 6 years ago. You know, that was kind of the story of the beginning of this continuous cycle of thinking I wasn't wanted, or that I couldn't be loved, and that I was beyond repair. And that really began a continual discussion of that. And all behind the scenes, the Lord was beginning to call out that you are mine. That was a kind of a continuous story for me as well. And so on one side, there was despair and hopelessness from bouncing from home to home. And the other side, there was the Lord guiding my steps where I'm at today. And so at the young age, I bounced back and forth between my God family and my biological mother. The biological family did the best that they could. My mom did the best that she could. She worked three jobs at times and did her best to provide for our family. And I recognize that now. But growing up, you know, I was in a home of abuse and neglect, and was often in fear when I came home, what would take place and what would happen to me. I began to deal with that really as far back as what I can remember, around the age of five. And that was kind of what my home life was like. I had a safe place with my God family. And then when I would go to my biological mother's house, I would have a place that wasn't safe or clean or those types of things. And that was just part of my chapter of my story. And at a very young age, I actually attempted suicide at 7, 8 years old.
Wow.
And I landed in a place in which I thought I have no hope.
Yeah.
I thought that I couldn't be loved. And once again, that I was beyond repair or restoration. And so when all that was taking place, I was really in a dark place, and attempts to take my own life, the first of a few attempts there at a young age.
You know, Reuben,
and, that was a...
Yeah, I know you've shared that there were times when you had to, just as a little boy, just young, you had to break into your mother's bedroom just trying to get food. And I know she battled mental illness.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're five, six, 7, 8 years old, you don't understand that. You know, you don't, you can't put those pieces together, but you just got really discouraged.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I've learned recently more about the mental health of my mom. She was a paranoid schizophrenic, also struggled with bipolar disease as well. And so the more I've learned about mental health, you know, I have better understanding of what happened to me. It's not an excuse for the things that took place, but it's allowed me to process and have understanding of her attempts to love me well. And it's also allowed me to show her grace and mercy in the same way that God has shown me grace and mercy, because the worst that I could think of any person in this world, the Lord, if he looked through all my closets and all the things that I've done, it would be way worse. And so I've just been reminded of recently, over the last few years, of healing to show forgiveness to my biological mother, despite the things that she did, and knowing that what she did was her best to love me well. And although it wasn't reflected in action at times, understanding that's what the attempt was.
Yeah. As we get older and we can begin to, I can, you know, remember having this conversation with some of mine, just trying to explain mental illness. And as we, you know, age and mature and we begin to understand things, it really puts things in perspective.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, that you're just a victim of circumstance when when a parent's battling mental illness, when they can't get the help. I know you said you attempted suicide several times by like the age of 8. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And your sister kind of helped. Did she kind of help you through that, you said? Or?
Yeah. So my biological sister, and I would say this today to her, is she really was my guardian angel at times.
Yeah.
Some of my suicide attempts, my sister was actually the person who would come and save me. A few times in which I tried to hang myself, my sister was actually the person who stepped in and saved me. And so she's a little older than I am, but she was strong-willed to come through and to help save me. And so she provided me with, you know, once again, the Lord was using specific people in my life to step in and continue to show me that I was worth living for, and I had value and worth, even if this world did not say I had value and worth. The Lord was beginning to plant seeds that I had value and worth, and it wasn't necessarily to other people at times, but to Him, I had value and worth.
So when you left your biological mother and your sister, mm-hmm. did you go? How old were you when you entered foster care?
Yeah, so I was 8 years old when I entered foster care soon after my last suicide attempt there. And I actually bounced around for an extended period of time, not too long. But the first family that I was actually, when I got placed in foster care, the first family that was supposed to adopt me was actually my God family. And so they stepped in and said, hey, we'll take him. Like, this is his home. He knows us. And, you know, they tried to bridge that gap for me. And part of the process that I learned recently was they were unable to keep me due to being terrorized by my biological mother. Mm. And so the family that I'd already known that was coming to keep me, to adopt me once again, I was removed from that home in order to keep their family safe as well. And so that is, once again, at the time, I didn't understand why they didn't want me.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why they didn't want to keep me. And now I've learned it wasn't out of anything that I had done, but it was out of the safety of everyone. And so my godmother, where she actually stepped into that place and let me know, like, Ruben, I had to let you go. But not because I didn't want you, but I had to let you go because I loved you. And I prayed for you and labored for you and knowing one day you would come back to me. And her and I have actually reconnected over the last 5 to 6 years in which she's been able to meet my daughter and meet my wife.
Oh,
and
that's
we've
great.
Got a relationship now.
Oh, that's great. Oh, I love that. So when you're in foster care for a while, but then you eventually end up in a group home.
Correct. So I bounced around 13 different foster homes over a span of 3 years, 13 different foster homes, two different mental hospitals, two different crisis units. And by the end of that, as you know, in Kentucky, there are levels to kids. I was a level 5 kid by that time. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of anger, animosity, hatred in my heart through the things I experienced. I was actually abused in two of my foster homes as well. And so I had a real difficulty with trusting authority, trusting people, trusting adults. And so as a result of that, I had this series of self-sabotage is what I would say, because I knew that if I controlled the chaos, that someone couldn't hurt me. And so I bounced around to all those places. And by the end of that, there was no foster home that would take me in because of my past and because of the things that I dealt with. And so heavily medicated, no place to go after my last crisis unit stay. There was a place called Spring Meadows through, at the time, Kentucky Baptist Home for Children, which is now known as Sunrise Children's Services, which is where I currently work. So the Lord has brought some things full circle there. But I was placed at Sunrise Children's Services, Spring Meadows in Louisville, Kentucky. And they were the only place that would take me. They were the only place that would open their doors to being able to allow me to stay there. There at Sunrise and at Spring Meadows, I was allowed to, I think, mourn is what I would say, and to be broken. I was allowed to crash and burn. To an extent, and kind of hit rock bottom where I was able just to let my anger out in a way that I really needed to. And not only was my anger being able to let out, but the staff there at Spring Meadows, which is a Christian organization, they loved me in a way that reflected Christ. And so many of those staff members there, I can remember specific events of how they showed me love in my worst moments. And there at Spring Meadows, you know, I most of the time when I acted in chaos, I was sent off to a different place. At Spring Meadows, they were like, there's no place for you to go, Reuben. This is it. Like, you're, buddy, you're here.
You're at the end of the line.
I didn't really understand that at the time, but, you know, I was there for over a year and a half, which is a very long time for the facility. But I was there, and every time, like, I'd be like, okay, I've actually had my own bed. I had, you know, meals that I didn't have to scramble for. You know, it wasn't roach infested, all of those types of things. And so I was able to just have a place that was my own. And that was the first time in my life that I really had gotten to experience that in the way that I understood it. And so I was able to spend quite a bit of time there, and the staff really helped love me through my chaos, and they loved me through my hard moments. And that was where the Lord had me at the time. And lo and behold, I didn't know this until a little later, that this whole time there was a little family called the Watsons. That were chasing me around the state, that were actually trying to bring me into their home. And so I had arrived at a place in which I thought nobody wanted me, and that I had no other place to go except for Spring Meadows. And lo and behold, a little truck driver and farmer from Logan County, Kentucky, would actually get me out of the Spring Meadows facility and would allow me to go and to stay with them. A unique part of that story is they would come to adopt me later on. But something that's really cool is that they actually had my biological sister with them in foster care. And so I wasn't able to see or live with my sister for about 4 years. And I saw her maybe once or twice during that time frame. And she asked my now mom and dad to find me. Lo and behold, they were chasing me around the state. I didn't know it at the time. I thought no one wanted me, but the Lord was just working things out to where in his time that they would bring me home, and they would call me you know, their child. And so my parents, my guardian angels, adopted me there out of Spring Meadows after about a year. And that was once again the Lord planting seeds of you are mine, and that I was his child, and that his story was still being written for me in my life. And so that's a story of how I got there with my my family now, and my guardian angels, my parents, who I don't know if we could be any different. But in those differences, the Lord is glorified. And it's just a reminder of, it doesn't matter where we come from, what you look like, or, you know, the differences. My parents are white and I am black, but they have loved me no different than their own children. And so, because I am theirs, you know, and it's funny to tell a quick story. My mom and my dad, I was big into sports, of course, as lots of teen boys are, and big into sports. And I was super excited to play in a basketball tournament. I broke my leg my freshman year of high school playing football. And then finally, I was up to play basketball. And I was like, all right, great, district tournament. Super excited about it. That's before I had understanding of discipline, keep in mind. And lo and behold, I had a tantrum, as many adolescent teenage boys do. And I had a temper tantrum, and my mom was like, you're not playing the basketball game this weekend. I was like, what? There's no way. I'm not playing that basketball game. I've waited all this time. It's a big rivalry, and was super excited about it.
And you're in the state of Kentucky, where basketball is king. Yes.
Yeah. And I said, I've got to play.
Yeah. Our listeners,
Town rival.
That's right. Listeners need to understand the importance of basketball in the state of Kentucky.
Yes.
So I'm with you.
Kentucky basketball is life. And so, especially in small towns.
That's right.
Small town, super excited, crosstown rival. And lo and behold, she said, you're not playing. And I was like, yes, I am. She says, no, you're not. I said, all right. And so I then had my temper tantrum, which I caused chaos, was breaking things, was angry, was throwing things, was yelling at my parents. And
she said
sure
you weren't
enough,
playing because why? Like was there some behaviors or just?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was just was being a knucklehead.
Yeah.
That's a normal, freshman year of high school going through hormones and all the above at the time. And in my chaos, and this is something that has always stuck with me, and she probably doesn't even remember it. But I was like, send me back to Spring Meadows, send me back to foster care. Like, I don't want to be here. Mm. And I continued with that. And she looked at me in the midst of everything that was going on. She said, I'm not letting you go. You are mine.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sending you back. This is your home. And I didn't understand the weight of that for me at the time. But looking back at it, that was the first time that a parent, I mean, that role had said in the midst of your chaos, like, I'm going to love you and I choose to love you.
Yeah.
And my mom and my dad chose to love me in that moment. I didn't get to play in the basketball tournament, by the way.
She stood her ground, right?
she stood her ground with that. Mama Bear was pretty upset. But in the midst of all that chaos, she stood her ground and said, you know, I'm going to love you anyways. I'm going to love you through it. And so that was the first time in my life that I had experienced that from a parent. And it wasn't because of my godmother not loving me or my biological mother not loving me in the best ways that they could. But it was just a result of at that time. The Lord knew that I was going to be their child and that they were going to plant seeds for me to come to know him in the future.
Hey guys, for the sake of time, we're going to pause Reuben's story right here, but I know you're anxious to hear the rest. So join us next time as we continue Reuben Watson's story and how God continues to use him in the lives of kids who are in foster care. I really appreciate you joining me today on the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, which is a ministry of Sin Relief. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with a friend, and you can find more information and subscribe at sinrelief.org. Thanks for listening and making us a part of your adoption and foster care journey.